Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter.
Squandered opportunities came back to haunt Purdue late as the Boilermakers fell to Wisconsin in triple overtime Saturday. Now they'll need a win still for bowl eligibility, the last chance coming Saturday at Indiana. I'm Kyle Charters. We'll talk football with Matt Stevens, then basketball after its loss to Virginia Tech in Charleston with Brian Newbert coming up a little bit later in the podcast. But first, let's hit that 47-44 loss in triple overtime. Matt, how do you diagnose this one? There were several factors, I think, involved in the Badgers' comeback victory. Where do you put the blame for the loss?
The inability of Purdue to just close out the game, however you want to interpret that, whether it's the defense couldn't close it out by getting any stop, basically from the fourth quarter, from about 10 minutes to the fourth quarter, left in the fourth quarter on to the walk-off of Jonathan Taylor, defense couldn't get a stop. The offense, however, also couldn't put the nail in the coffin either, and either A, run out the clock so the defense didn't have to be on the field to close it out, or B, probably get one more score, whether that be 3 or 7 points, and maybe make it just – and at the point where it was 27-13, I think Purdue had the ball and a chance to maybe make it a 3-score game, and they just couldn't do it. The idea also that Purdue had – I think it was – I counted 5 shots from the 2-yard line to get a touchdown and didn't. And so essentially left 4 points on the table on each of those drives. So that's 8 points. And it really would have closed it out had they gotten into the end zone instead of having to settle for, 20 and 21-yard field goals. It was a game where you felt like Purdue had control in the middle of the fourth quarter. But once Wisconsin started to get some success in the pass game – You knew you were in for a long night because you didn't have any confidence that Purdue's defense was going to be able to stop them, and it seemed like Purdue's offense really kind of took the foot off the gas in the middle of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, certainly you can look at the defense. I mean, 321 yards from Jonathan Taylor, but I agree with you. I think offensively Purdue had the 2 major missed red zone opportunities with the end goal situations. The second one in the fourth quarter, 10 minutes to go, first and goal from the 10. Markell Jones gets the first carry. I can't help but feel like Markell was thinking to himself, don't fumble into the end zone, as he's sort of lunging toward that pylon a little bit. But it gives Purdue a second and goal from the 1. And at that point, Purdue up 24-13. And you just can't help but feel like if Purdue punches that ball in for a touchdown, being up 3 scores with 10 minutes to go against that offense, Purdue really would have been in the driver's seat. But it's held out of the end zone with a second and goal, then a third and goal, has to kick the short field goal. And it's all Wisconsin, as you said, basically from that point. Purdue got the ball back, but a 3-and-out. Back-to-back touchdowns gives it overtime. Purdue can't move the ball at the end of regulation, which I felt like maybe that was the, aside from getting up 3 scores, the chance to move the ball with a minute to go and really only needing about 30 yards to get into field goal range, not being able to do that then. Just so many missed opportunities for Purdue in that game. And it gave Wisconsin the very narrow opening in the window that it needed, and the Badgers were able to take advantage.
It seemed like every time Purdue had a chance to really win the ball game, Kyle, in a sense of momentum, that Wisconsin stole all the momentum back. And while they really didn't have a lead until I think it was about the third quarter, you never felt like Purdue had a stranglehold on the momentum. And that goes all the way back to the last drive before half, Kyle, because you sit there and you go, well, if this becomes 14-3 instead of 10-3 going into half, we got something going here. You start to get the feeling like you did against Ohio State when they made it 14-3, and you're sitting there, after the fake field goal, and you're going, well, Purdue's got a 2-score lead here. This is going exactly the way you want. They get that goal line stand again right before half, and Wisconsin almost felt like it was a tie game, or it was or they had the lead, and then the first play after in the second half, Jonathan Taylor goes for 80 yards, and you felt like while it was a tie game, you felt like Wisconsin was up by a score, you know, at that point, just momentum-wise. It never felt like every chance Purdue had – in every chance Purdue had an opportunity to seize the momentum and basically stick their foot on the throat of Wisconsin. They never did. And Wisconsin got up off the deck every single time. And people wonder why Jeff Brohm didn't go for two at the end of the second overtime. He had just watched – and I get the logic. And I understand if you're a Purdue fan, you still wanted him to go for two. I get that. But he watched five times his team try to get in from inside the 2-yard line, and it didn't happen, and they were 0 for 5. At that point, you know, Jeff Brohm talks about we play to win the game. I really didn't think he had a play that he thought he could call from the 2-yard line that could get in the end zone. And so from that standpoint, you know, I just felt like Wisconsin out-physicaled them, and you expected that to happen. But you didn't expect it to happen in the fourth quarter when you felt like Wisconsin was going to, you know, be a little bit tired and B, maybe a little bit mentally checked out after being down two scores, and that just didn't happen. And so you've got to give a lot of credit to Wisconsin's interior defensive line and their linebackers, which I said earlier in the week in my interview with Jason Galloway that I still felt like that linebacker core was one of the best that Wisconsin's had and one of the more underappreciated when they're all healthy. Well, Van Ginkel is 100% healthy now, and you saw what he can do, you know, on Saturday by leading the team in tackles, by causing that Isaac Zico fumble, by doing everything he could to keep his defense in the game. I just felt like every time Purdue had a chance to make a momentum shifting play, they literally and sometimes, you know, figuratively and sometimes literally dropped the ball.
Yeah, I always feel like a coach should have a 2-point conversion play that it feels like is, you know, going to work for a time when it needs to. But if Jeff Brohm had that play for that game and that matchup, he would have used it in one of those five times that you outlined that Purdue had the ball down at the 1 or 2 yard line and couldn't get it in. I tweeted in the moment that he should consider it but shouldn't do it. So it's sort of hard to Monday morning quarterback your way to saying that he should have gone for two. Because at that very moment, I think that he made the right call. Now you could look back and say, now maybe in hindsight you think, man, Purdue's defense was just wore out. Getting them back on the field for one more series there was not going to work out, and it didn't. But in that very moment, my feeling was go for the tie, get it to the next overtime, and don't go for two. It turned out to not work for the Boilermakers. Speaking of defense and it being gassed there at the end of the game, has Purdue's defense regressed? Is it simply a matter – is this all Jacob Thieneman? Is the defensive line just not getting any better? What's your assessment of where Purdue stands now defensively?
Well, I think the defensive line has been stagnant for about a month and a half, and I think we knew it. They've reached their ceiling. It's not a very high ceiling, but they reached it. And it is what it is. I mean, you're getting everything you can out of, you know – those guys up front. I do think Lorenzo Neal's had a really good season. You know, they just stopped again. Purdue stopped trying to give him, you know, rest because he played 70 plus snaps on Saturday. It's a matter of trying to find another option, which was, you know, Kewon Jones or Anthony Watts. But yeah, also I don't think it's a coincidence that Cornell Jones goes out of the game and suddenly now Wisconsin can move the football both through the air and through and on the ground. Just because of the linebacker depth, and Jalen Alexander is going to be a really good player, but he's not prepared to play 50 plus snaps. And that's essentially he was asked to play every snap from about the, you know, beginning of the fourth quarter on. And I don't think he's prepared to do that in a big time situation. And then, for whatever reason, because they didn't do it for three quarters, Wisconsin found a matchup that they liked, and that was a one-on-one matchup against Antonio Blackman. And God bless his heart, I don't even think Antonio really needs to be ripped for not being in the right position and not doing what he's coached to do. He just physically got manhandled away from the football twice by Danny Davis. So, yeah, I think they have regressed, and I don't think Brennan Thieneman is at the level of his older brother, and nobody probably at this point expects him to be. But the reality is that if Purdue's defense is going to be really, really good, either A, Brennan Thieneman's got to get better, or B, Navon Mosley's got to be better. And as I pointed out in our film review, Kyle, on Golden Black, you know, Navon Mosley took about the most confusing and half-speed angle I've ever seen on that 80-yard touchdown to Jonathan Taylor. And I get that he's already 12 yards behind the play anyway, and he's got to try to get there. But he's got to get there. And Nick Holt has talked about that's the difference between a 5-yard gain and a 30-yard gain and a 10-yard gain and an 80-yard gain is that play right there, because you're the guy that's unblocked, essentially, if you look at that play. And so I just felt like, you know, Wisconsin, especially in the second half with its zone blocking scheme, just out-physicaled Purdue on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. I felt like the interior mm-hmm. of Purdue's offensive line just got manhandled as well. And it was a yeoman's job by David Blau to find enough time to get some of those long passes away so that Purdue could move the football. But Purdue was not going to move the football running the ball. And that was a major issue to trying to close out this game as well, is that when there was an opportunity for Purdue's offensive line to physically get the job done, they couldn't do it. So, again, I mean, Jeff Brohm summed it up with one sentence: we had our chances. And I feel like that's a man who looked at the bully that has the historical bully of the Big Ten West and thought, I had him exactly where I wanted him, and I let him off the hook. And I think a lot of people feel that way about Saturday.
Yeah, that was a frustrating sequence as well. After Wisconsin scored the first touchdown to get within a touchdown, Purdue gets the ball back with about 6 minutes to go. It gets 6 yards on first down with DJ Knox. Then no yards, then an incomplete pass, then a punt, then Wisconsin ties it up. That was right when you felt like Purdue maybe could get a first down or two and you know, put the screws to Wisconsin a little bit. The Boilermakers aren't able to do so. All right, so this has been a weird up and down season. Purdue gets 3 victories at home against ranked opponents. The other 4 games, it loses at home by a total of 11 points. So how's this end? Does it end on the upswing of the roller coaster or on a real downer at Indiana, where Purdue is, at least early here, a 4-point favorite in Bloomington?
Well, I've gotten the last 4 or 5 games wrong that I've covered at Purdue. So I'm 0 for my last 5 in terms of predictions. I don't even know why people pay attention to it anymore. But how does this end? I don't know. It's a road game that Purdue is favored, which has not been good to the Boilermakers this last month. They were favored again. The crazy thing, Kyle, is that so there's 4 games, I think, 4 or 5, because I think they were favored against Northwestern, right? Because Clayton Thorson's deal was still unknown. Mm-hmm. So you got the Northwestern game, Eastern Michigan, Michigan State, Minnesota, and now last week, where Purdue was favored and didn't get the job done. That's 5 games right there, and you're 5-6. I mean, that's an unbelievable thing to look at if you're Purdue. Now, granted, you beat Ohio State, and you weren't at all favored in that game, and you beat Boston College, and you weren't at all favored in that game. But it's been a very big roller coaster ride, and I almost think Purdue would rather be the underdog going to Bloomington, because I just feel like they don't want that pressure of being favored to take the bucket back. And, you know, Indiana's playing good football. They played competitively with Michigan for 4 quarters, and everybody kind of saw that. So there's no doubt that the folks in Bloomington think they have enough confidence to take back the bucket. And so it'll be an interesting game. I just think that Purdue's got to figure out a way to – offensively, they've got to be able to counter their passing game with something. And if it's not the run game, then as I said in the film review, maybe it's the screen game, where it can be pseudo runs to DJ Knox, where you just throw screens.
Yeah.
Or maybe it can be a Rondell Moore that you hand the football to. Something's got to complement the pass game, because right now Purdue's a one-dimensional offense, and I don't know what dimension they are in defense, because they can't stop the run. And if somebody really wants to throw the football on them, they don't really know what they're doing there from a one-on-one matchup standpoint either. So I think there's going to be a lot of points in Bloomington if the weather is, you know, decent. But But I don't know how this ends, because this has been the weirdest football season that I've ever covered. And a nice how do you do to your first year covering Purdue for me. But I don't have any idea who's going to win this game, because the home team has a lot of confidence that they can beat Purdue. And the road team's coming off of two straight losses where, you know, they're shaking their head trying to figure out what happened.
More from Jeff Brohm and the Boilermakers. Look for match reports on goldenblack.com a little bit later on this afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks, Kyle.
Let's bring in Brian Newbert. We'll do that here in just a moment. He tries to make his way still from Charleston, where the Boilermakers took 2 of 3 in the Classic. We'll talk to him here in just a moment on Gold and Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, Industrial and Classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chops, salads, burgers, fresh fish, and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great section of craft beer-inspired cocktails and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar and dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
The Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus is your experienced real estate group in Greater Lafayette. If you're looking to buy, sell, upsize, or downsize, give me a call or text at 765-412-5217. Or email at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
And let's bring in Brian Newbert, fresh off covering the Boilermakers in the Charleston Classic. Purdue falls to 16th-ranked Virginia Tech in the championship game on Sunday evening. Brian, though, my feeling coming out of that, you know, three games over 4 day span is I feel pretty good about where Purdue is. I think they're better offensively at this point in the season than I ever would have really anticipated the Boilermakers being. You know, and even though they had some defensive breakdowns, I feel like I overall come out of the weekend feeling a little bit better about Purdue than what I thought I would. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think everybody could probably have looked at this season prior to this season with a different feeling, just because so much is new and so much is unknown. If you want to think that, if you wanted to think that Purdue was going to be really good this season, you probably did. If you were worried about them because everything, there was a lot of new guys and a lot of guys in different roles, you probably were. I think what you saw from Purdue right away and over kind of the total body of work this season, not just Charleston, has been a team that seems like they're pretty far along here already. And, you know, consistency is going to be something they probably still have to prove the rest of the season, but they're playing well. They're playing well at both ends of the floor, the second half of against Virginia Tech notwithstanding. I think you can put a couple of little qualifiers on that, one of them being that Virginia Tech is really good, the other one being that I think Nojel Eastern's foul trouble really, really threw them for a loop. If you run down the things that were very evident in Charleston, one of them was how important Nojel Eastern is to them defensively. When he picked up that third foul on that offensive foul and had to go out of the game, it wasn't a coincidence that that's when kind of the avalanche started on that 22-6 run that flipped the game on its side. But I think that Purdue showed enough offensively, Purdue showed enough defensively, Purdue has shown enough as a rebounding team, which was a huge question coming into the season. Some newcomers are playing very well. Carson Edwards is playing very well in a very different role. The two sophomores have done enough positive things here where you kind of look at this team and you look at them as being pretty good, having a chance to be very good. And that was an NCAA tournament type of game they played yesterday that could have gone either way there at the end, even after what might be one of the better teams in college basketball, in Virginia Tech, blew their doors off there for the span of I don't know how many minutes it was, but that was a pretty significant uppercut Purdue took that it responded from and still had a chance there at the end.
Yeah, I think the takeaway defensively in the second half, like you said, Nojel Eastern needs to be on the court. I mean, that is clear at this point because it gives Purdue an on-ball defender that really sort of they otherwise lack. I mean, I think Ryan Klein is a try-hard defender, and Carson Edwards can be okay, even though he gives you so much more offensively. He still goes out there and works hard, I think, defensively. But Nojel Eastern, sort of a different level. And the other thing that you need, in my opinion, is sort of a rim protector, and that needs to be Matt Harms. I know he can block some shots. I don't think he's great defensively, though, in general, but you need him to take another step forward defensively. That, I mean, those two things are pretty clear, right? I mean, you sort of need those two guys playing at a high level defensively on the court for Purdue.
Yeah, and that's sort of something that probably went into the defense, too, in the second half, too, is Evan Boudreau was playing so well, you had to have him on the floor. Yesterday was not Matt Harms' best game, obviously. The physicality, the athleticism, I think, was a lot for him to handle. But Evan Boudreau was playing so well, Purdue needed him on the floor. And without the shot blocker out there, you wonder if maybe a couple of those baskets at the rim Virginia Tech got weren't a little bit easier. But they'll get that straightened out. Matt Harms will be a big part of what Purdue does the rest of the season. So will Evan Boudreau. But the most important thing is Purdue gets Nojel Eastern on the floor. I think if Nojel Eastern's on the floor normal minutes in that second half, I think the game is very different because Justin Robinson really started to assert himself right after Nojel Eastern went out of the game. Virginia Tech's offense just started rolling, and I did think Purdue wore down a little bit. They played really, really hard the whole trip. They played really, really hard in the first half. Virginia Tech is a really big, really physical sort of team that can tire people out, and I think that probably played a role in it too. Purdue does not have the depth in its backcourt or the ability in its backcourt to not have a key player on the floor, let alone a profoundly impactful one from a defensive perspective. They can't have him on the bench and not feel it. Other guys had to play probably more minutes than they needed to, and that kind of led to the battle of attrition that I think Virginia Tech kind of ultimately won.
Offensively, I mean, there were times in the first half that was just extremely fun to watch. I think you tweeted at one point during the game about Nojel Eastern posting up. That was your, I think you said something like that was Purdue's point guard posting up and then turning and spinning the ball to the center on the other side of the court who hits a three-pointer. I mean, it just feels like these guys sort of are understanding their roles offensively, accepting of them. Everybody out there can shoot, maybe with the exception of Eastern, though he doesn't need to be able to do that, it doesn't seem right now. But when it's clicking and those guys are passing like that, it just felt like Purdue was just getting open shots everywhere at one point during that first half. It was pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, and when I say Purdue looks advanced, I think that's probably what I'm inarticulately trying to say. The last couple Purdue teams, those guys played so much basketball together that they were kind of sharing a brain. They knew where each other were going to be. They had such incredible chemistry that was built over a very short period of time. You don't just show up on campus with that. This team obviously is breaking in five guys who just put on the Purdue uniform in a formal manner for the first time. Very different ball handlers. The ball is in the hands of guys who are playing much different roles than they did last season in terms of the volume of minutes and the magnitude of responsibility. And for them to be showing that sort of, chemistry, I guess, for lack of a better term, has been pretty notable. And it just looks like this is what you would expect to be seeing 4 or 5 weeks from now, if not the very end of the season. And it's happening in game five. Now, it wasn't enough against Virginia Tech, but it's going to be enough if it keeps up against a lot of people from here on out. I did think, though, that, and perhaps Nojel Eastern might have changed this had he been in the game, but I thought when stuff kind of got hairy there in the second half, Purdue probably could have used a little bit of a calming influence. I don't know who that player is going to be, if Purdue's going to have one this season, but they did get a little out in front of themselves a couple of times in really, really important spots where they just needed a good possession. And didn't necessarily get one.
More from Charleston on the site at goldandblack.com. Thank you, sir. Have a good trip back.
No problem. Thanks.
All right, let's take one more break. We'll be back to wrap up this podcast. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brahm Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights, and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charters.
More on the site this week, even through the holiday for football and basketball, as the Boilermaker football team gets set to play for the Old Oak and Bucket on Saturday. Purdue back in action in men's basketball, 2 o'clock on Friday against Robert Morris. Of course, previews of all those things at goldandblack.com. Thanks to our sponsors, as always, East End Grill, First Source Bank, Charter Team at Remax Ability Plus, Follett's, the 6th Street Dive, and Purdue Federal Credit Union. Be sure to check out all of our sponsors. All right, that'll do it for this podcast. For Matt Stevens and Brian Newbert, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.